One thing I just wanted to close the book on this asteroid, oh, sorry, the Kierkegaard gap problem. So I think we spent a lot of time on it, and I think I know what the problem is. The problem was we were looking at circular orbits. I think that's kind of what I suspected. And I think the calculation that Natasha did was almost correct, except that it doesn't quite work for circular orbits because circular orbits have a symmetry for which basically everything can, all the effects cancel. But for generic orbits that are not circular, that's not a problem. So if you imagine that you have an asteroid on an elliptical orbit, and this is Jupiter, and this is the Sun, right? So an asteroid spends most of the time in its aphelion, where it's farthest. And let's say every time that it's here, the asteroid is here, Jupiter is here. So it spends most of the time here. And if there is a resonance, every time the asteroid is here, Jupiter is in one place, right? And in the same place, or after some time, it's in the same place. So during that time, there is a net torque which doesn't cancel, it's not zero. And that has to do with the fact that this is not a circular orbit. So there's basically the geometry of this orbit breaks the symmetry. So if you calculate the average torque around, if the periods are random, the average torque of the Jupiter on the asteroid would be zero. But if there is a resonance, the average torque wouldn't be zero, because where the asteroid spends most of its time, Jupiter would be always in one place, basically. Or on average, it's more likely to be in one place, so the torque wouldn't be on average zero. So mathematically, the way to see this is just to calculate the torque, which is like dL by dt, would be something like g m, let's see, m asteroid, let's say ma, mj divided by ra minus r. So this is L of asteroid, rj cubed. And this would be r asteroid cross ra, I guess this would be rj minus ra. Right. So this is torque, which is r cross f, right? Definition of torque, and this would be basically just gm a mj divided by ra minus rj cubed rj minus so ra cross ra would be zero, so it would be just ra cross rj. Okay. And basically, so the point is that to calculate the average of this and see how it changes with time, or integrate or integral of this. So I can factor out GMAMJ. And then it would be integral dt RA cross RJ divided by RA minus R. RJ. Okay. So it's this integral. And to do this, so the interesting thing to, and I'm not going to do this in detail, but the thing to notice is that this integral, or this so RA is periodic, so you could write it as a sum over terms that look like n a n e to the I n omega a t. So this is the frequency of the asteroid. So anything that's periodic with frequency of omega, or period of 2 pi over omega, you could do a Fourier expansion, right? And RJ is the same thing, it's periodic, but with the period of, let's call this B, I m omega j t. right? So, so then the idea then would be that you can plug these in here, and in general, it's going to look complicated, but in principle, you can imagine that this can be Taylor expanded. And so in terms of e to the I omega a t, and in terms of e to the I omega j times t, so if you plug these in here, you could basically Taylor expand it, and you would get LA is g ma mj integral dt of some sum over m n, some coefficient cmn, and then there would be e to the I n omega a t e to the I m omega j t. And this goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. Same with m. So this cmn depends on an and bn, and basically it would be a Taylor expansion or double Taylor expansion in terms of these two variables, e to the I omega a t and e to the I omega j t. So this would be a two variables. So these are Taylor expansion in terms of those variables. If you plug those in here, there would be two independent variables, and you can Taylor expand in terms of those in principle, and these are the coefficients of that. So this cmn depends on an and bn. And here you can see where the resonance happens, right? This integral, on average, in general, this integral would be something that's finite unless this sum vanishes, right? If nm, hey guys, so if I do this integral over time, then I get g ma mj sigma mn cmn, and then there is integral of this would be e to the I. Let's see, it's n omega a plus m omega j t divided by n omega a plus m omega j. Right, minus 1, I guess, if you integrate from 0 to t. Okay, so this is the idea of resonance, right? If you have two frequencies, if there is any combination of linear combination of them with integer coefficients that vanishes, then this integral becomes infinite, right? Because this denominator goes to zero, and from this you could get, of course, this coefficient could be a small. So in general, if that's not the case, the effect would be a small, but would be periodic, right? It wouldn't add up unless this vanishes, and then it would grow with time. If the denominator vanishes, the numerator, right? Does it? Let's see. Does that? There's something funny. So I mean, we know that if the sum of these two vanishes, then it's a constant, then integral should grow like time. So that should grow like. Right. So I'm just wondering whether the limit somehow is different from what it should be. Right. One plus I. No. Okay. No. That's true. No. So it grows. If this thing becomes a small, then you can Taylor expand it. So you get one plus I times this, and those guys cancel. But then there's still a t that's left there, right? And that t could grow indefinitely. Okay. So that's the idea. So this would be. So from this, you could also get the resonance profile, right? That so how far you have to be from resonance to therefore effect to be important. This CMN, you could just fix it from dimensional grounds. It should have a scale of 1 over length squared, right? CMN. Right, because this is just, I'm replacing this argument with this expansion here. So this CMN has dimension of 1 over length squared, which would be the size of the orbits of Jupiter and asteroids, some combination of those. I can say, yeah, so this would be of order either 1 over Ra squared or 1 over Rj squared. And then this thing you can get, look at the expansion around, how it looks like around zero. So I guess this is what it is. And if I average it, yeah, I wonder whether I should just average this. So good. So the average of this thing is zero, and then you get 1 over n omega a plus m omega j. So right, they could be positive or negative. Because these are real, for any a of n and a of minus n should be the same here. The same would be here. And I think the same is true here as well, because this guy is real. Right? So there's be a symmetric for n and m. So this thing would be, if you're interested in a particular resonance, so most of the terms would be a small, because mj is a small, except for the one that's resonant. And the one that would be resonant, or close to resonant, would be as, basically, would go as 1 over this guy, right? So delta L, you get for a particular resonance, for mn resonance, would be roughly then g ma mj divided by one of these r squareds, which is the scale of cmn. And probably there are functions of m and n, like m factorial and things of that sort as well. So those we're not writing down here. And then there's 1 over, basically, n omega a plus m omega j. And then this becomes of order L of asteroid itself, which is ma, and let's say va ra. Then the effect is of order 1. So that gives you the width of the resonance. Okay. So where this is 0, of course, this would be very big. But then this becomes of order the actual angular momentum of the asteroid, means that the effect is comparable to angular momentum. And if it gets bigger, this guy gets, the distance becomes bigger, then this becomes, the delta L becomes smaller than actual angular momentum, so the effect would be small. Does this make sense? I think this is similar to the result that what Natasha calculated, but you can go back and see. So, or maybe she didn't finish the calculation. right. Yeah. But, okay, so this is exactly, so at the resonance, this vanishes, this number. So if you will, I can make it a bit more explicit. Let's say at the resonance, omega A, omega resonance, let's say, so we're talking about the asteroid, right? Omega A resonance, or let's say omega MN is minus m over n times, and I guess this, the sign, it doesn't matter really, because these are all positive. M over n times omega Jupiter. Okay, so the distance from the resonance then would be just, since ma is canceled, of course, here. The distance from the resonance would be n times omega a minus omega mn. Right, I'm taking this to the right-hand side, would be of order g mj divided by RA cubed VA. Right. So that would be the distance from the resonance. So at the resonance, this thing vanishes. So the actual value of this number would be how far it is from the resonance. Does this make sense? You look confused. So it doesn't make sense.
I don't know. Like, when I look at this, honestly, like, I would have never thought of this as a
solution.
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. Well, that's we live and learn, all of us.
So one thing is we couldn't have assumed circular orbits.
Right. So that was the mistake, I guess, of the problem.
So where does the non-circularity come in?
Okay. So non-circularity, it's not obvious where it comes in, but it just the thing is, for circular orbits, if you plug these in here, you get zero. That's what we were finding before, right? Because this is an odd function, it turns out.
So you're saying the question itself was in a way.
The question had the problem. Yes. I screwed up, is that?
No, I just because we tried for this question, like we tried like a week.
Right.
Like,
really?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well.
Good?
Good. Now we know the solution. Good. Thank you, guys. So now we have two assignments to go through. And I guess one is apparently much easier than the other, so I heard. Right.
Yeah, but really, it's like easier.
Okay, good. So let's go and get them then. So who's gonna? So which assignment is this? Assignment 4 or 5 now?
5.
Let me just get it. So who's gonna do the first?
I can do the first.
Okay, Mike. Go ahead. Thank you. Assignment 5?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. 5, 6, 7. So we're gonna do 5 and 6, I guess that's it. Okay. You got the microphone, perfect. So, going to tell us what the problem is?
So the problem is to find at what radius a bulge would have caused, or the number distribution of stars is twice what it would be at infinity caused by a black hole. I start with one simplifying assumption, which is to treat stars as uniform test particles, so they all have mass m. From that, you can describe the distribution function as some constant times kT. The velocity term will just be your kinetic energy, so it just ends up resulting in the standard thing. But more importantly, kT over m is equal to pi variance squared over 3 pi minus 8 from just statistical descriptions. So particularly, we don't expect velocities to be related to position overall. So really, since we're interested in the relative distributions, we'll get that the beta terms cancel, and we get that we can actually even expand this out. So
what is that? 3 pi minus 8?
3 pi minus 8. It's just from statistics.
It's like for so the standard Maxwell distribution is for a variable would be v squared over 2a squared.
Right.
And a is related to the variance of it by a squared is equal to a squared is equal to k2 over m, but it's also equal to 3 pi minus 8 over 3 or over pi.
Okay. I see. So this is the particular difference. What do you mean by sigma here?
The variance, like the variance of the distribution of the variable, a variable described by a Maxwell distribution.
Okay, I would have said A is the variance, but I guess you have a different definition of variance. So this is the definition of variance of what?
So if you're using the standard like. Then you get this. As this relation, as the in terms of a.
So this is the variance of the absolute value of velocity. Is that what it is? Okay, I see that's the difference. Yeah. So I guess I was thinking of the variance of the velocity as a vector, but I guess here you think of variance of s speed instead of velocity.
Yeah.
So I suppose. I don't know. I mean, I guess
it's just a
different
small
definition.
It's a small factor.
Yeah,
it's
small
more
factor.
Play a major
fine,
part.
Fine.
Yeah, because it's like small. So.
Okay. So let's. So why don't you just skip to the final result?
Sure. So yeah, you can replace the m over kt's in both these terms
mm-hmm.
by that, and eventually you'll get that this is equal to m black hole g over r. A squared using that definition of a. So setting this to be equal to 2. You can solve for r to get 1.1 parsecs.
Why don't you give the expression for r in terms of the other?
Sure. In terms of what?
In terms of g, mass of the black hole, sigma squared.
Okay, sure.
Then
we can. R would be m black hole.
Up to that factor of pi over 3 pi minus 8,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing everybody got the same result?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And the value is of a parsec?
Yeah.
Over, okay.
You didn't ask for a value for 1 parsec, right?
I said, what is the radius? What is this radius for Sagittarius A star?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. What did you say?
I got 10 to the 13 kilometers. I don't know.
It's parsec.
Yes.
Is it?
And
for it's that. Yeah. So I guess if you haven't noticed on the, so far, we do CGS in this course. So kilometers and meters, they're kind of strange to me.
So parsec
is 3 times 10 to the 18 centimeters. And indeed, a kilometer is 10 to the 5 centimeters. So you're right. Okay.
So parsec is CGS?
Oh. Parsec is it's kind of
parsec is just
parsec
useful
is
for
just
astronomical.
Right, that's a good point. No, it's not CGS. Parsec is not CGS, but it's convenient for some people who use CGS. Okay. Thanks, Mike. So good. So the next next part is now instead assume that stellar body is a singular self-gravitating isothermal sphere. Right. So who's gonna do that? Sure, Sasa. Thank you.
Here, I think we are just comparing the gravitational fields. The gravitational field for the black hole to the gravitational field.
Why don't you use the other board so that we can compare this? Yeah, and compare this. Mine gets with yours. Thank you.
Okay, so. For an isothermal sphere, we have this with the Poisson equation, where rho is equals to sigma squared divided by 2 pi jr squared. So I guess this is equals to 2 sigma squared over r squared, which can give us the gravitational field. Isothermal sphere, which is given by this. And then for the black hole, potential is given by G mass of black hole divided by R. So the gravitational field is actually given by minus J mass of the black hole divided by R squared. So at the limit, we have both gravitational fields equals, which will give us R equals to J mass of black hole divided by 2 sigma squared. And I don't have a value for it.
And sorry?
I don't have the value for that.
That's okay. Okay. So, but I mean, this is similar to that. I guess instead of log 2, we have 2 there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's that extra factor. Thanks, Sasa. This is 5-2. Okay. So, Chiamaka, you've been away. So you should make up for that. You want to do number... Yeah, so you want to do number 3 now?
Okay.
You can do number 4 as well.
Okay.
That's
to make up.
To make up, right.
Can I bring this down now?
Sure.
Okay, so the third one was, Sasa, can I have that, please?
Of course.
Find a time when gravitational collisions become important over the age of the universe. So what I did here was to assume that so gravitational collisions are going to be important when the time is greater than or proportional to the collisional time. And so what I did was to say, okay, the age of the universe is going to be proportional to Tc from this time. Gravitational collisions should be important. And Tc is given as the number of particles in the system over the log of n times T dynamical, where T dynamical is gm over R cubed raised to the power of 1 over 2. So in this case, n is the total number of particles in the system, and m is the total mass in the system. So for this, so I have to say that T, which is the age of the universe, is proportional to n over log n, gm over R cubed to the power of minus 1/2. And n, it's going to be the total mass of the system over the mass of the particles involved in the system. And m, remember m, we're going to get from the isothermal. For the isothermal sphere, it's going to be the integral of the density and this is going to be so g squared r over g. So we're going to have n in terms of r, n in terms of r over here, and m here in terms of r. And equating that, we're going to have an equation that looks like this. Square root of 2 sigma r squared gm star log of 2 sigma squared over gm star plus log of r. So I have to solve this for the radius at which T is the edge of the universe.
Uh-huh.
And the edge of the universe in seconds is 13.7 times 3.16 times 10 to the power 16 seconds. And the solution, as Natasha said yesterday, you have two R's,
okay,
but one of them is going to give you an N that's less than one,
mm-hmm,
and the right one is going to be, I have 8.2 times 10 to the power 18 cm, since you want CGS.
Yeah.
But where's the second one?
What's
in
the second
Mathematica
one?
Gave me just one. So
oh, really?
Numerically gave me just this one.
Well,
maybe
Mathematica
maybe
gave me two.
Me too.
Mathematica gave me one, but I had already put in an assumption, so I'm assuming it might have been that.
I didn't put any assumption. I just gave the equation.
And you solved this equation?
Yes.
And you have one?
Yeah.
But if n is less than one, then the log becomes negative. If you have absolute value of log, if that's what you've got, then
n is less than 1?
Yeah, you said that there is 1 with n less than 1, but if n is less than 1, log becomes negative.
Uh-huh.
So,
but is there anything wrong
because
with that?
There is n divided by log n. If n is less than 1, log becomes negative. So then there could not be a solution unless you have an absolute value there. So that's what I'm... Did you put an absolute value?
Nope.
Okay.
I just solved it like this.
So then I don't see how you could have a solution with negative, with
because it's mathematical.
Right, mathematical, that's a good point. The mathematical.
That's crazy.
Oh, we have the
yeah.
same thing.
We have the same thing.
Okay, the right solution is right. That's
okay.
Good. Okay, perfect. So it's of the same order, it seems that. Okay, good. So this is number three and the number four.
And the number four was. Now imagine a gas of cloud around the sphere of influence. And then you have three conditions for it to form a star. And you have three conditions for it to form a star. And those conditions are that it should be in viral equilibrium, it should be tidally bound, and the mass should be between 0.1 and 100 solar masses. So what I imagined was that, okay, there's a black hole at this center here. And let's say this sphere of influence is over here. Then we have a cloud of mass over here with a mass R and the radius R. And
I guess like what I understood is like it's a sphere inside a sphere. So the sphere of the influence is inside a sphere of gas. So it's going to be a sphere around the sphere.
Surrounded by the...
So
okay.
Changes.
I imagine the gas cloud of mass M and radius R. So you imagine it with the shell? Is that the...
Yes.
Okay. But sorry.
So this is a sphere of influence in that. So the tidal force, it's going to be possible as a result of shearing on the cloud. And so it's going to have, so the force we expect on this part of the cloud is going to be different from the force on this part of the cloud. And we have to take the difference between those forces to get a tidal force. And that's going to give us... Well, why did I go to tidal first? Okay, for viral equilibrium, you have that the two kinetic energy is equal to the potential energy. And that's saying that m sigma squared is equal to gm squared over r. And that's saying that sigma squared is gm over r. So m is proportional to sigma squared over g r. So the log of m is going to be proportional to the log of r plus the log of this constant.
Why are you taking the log?
Because you said plot this on the log something. So for the...
log of m.
Oops.
Okay.
And then for the tidal case, we expect that the tidal force that this mass is going to feel due to the black hole should be less than the self-gravity of the star, otherwise it's going to shred it into pieces. So the condition we gave here is that the tidal force should be less than the self-gravity. And F tidal, when you take the difference of the forces at this point and at this point, you're going to have mass of the black hole 1 over Rs minus R squared minus 1 over Rs plus R squared, and this should be proportional to GM over R squared. And these you can approximate. So for the denominator, you can assume that Rs is far greater than R, and this is going to give us over Rs to the power of 4. And then for the numerator, you're going to have... For the numerator, you're going to have So r squared is going to cancel the other r squared. So you're going to have 4 r rs. And this is going to be gmbh, 4 gmbh r over rs cubed should be proportional to gm of r squared. And that's saying that the mass should go as mbh r cubed over rs cubed.
So this is something that I always have in mind, that you can always do this kind of question, but the rule of thumb is that if the density of the cloud or whatever object you have is bigger than the density of the tidal, like the shearing tidal force, or whatever is causing the shearing tidal force, then it's tidally bound. So you see that those are the densities, right? So there is m black hole divided by rs cubed, and then m cloud divided by r cloud cubed. So you need it to be bigger. One need to be bigger.
Yeah,
than that, right?
We need, so this is less than this.
Right.
Less than this. When I solve this, I think this should be greater than this.
Right.
Let's see. Yeah.
I get something very small, but when it
greater
since RS is so large.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like if you're using RS in terms of like RS.
But it depends on what RS, but
RS is
but we're looking at R in terms of R sun, right?
But we're gonna do that next. So we have two criterion, and then the third is the mass should be between 0.1 and 100 solar mass. So can you then plot these? There's a log that you're missing, so it's 3 log r. There is no q.
No r.
Okay. I didn't plot this on mathematical, I just did it schematically.
Right.
And I have this is log r, and I have this is log m. And I have, that should be linear for the viral equilibrium. Now something that goes like that. And for the tidally bound, have something that goes like this. Yes, okay, so I can rewrite that.
That's okay. That
no, because you said log m and log r of this thing, so I felt maybe the
okay, and we have to be at the right hand side of?
We have to be.
To the right hand side of the lower curve?
We have to be this thing.
No, m should be bigger, right?
Yeah, so you should be below.
You should be here?
Yeah.
So this is virial. Is virial strict equality?
Yeah, that's a thing, right? Because if
virial
it's an equality, then we just have to be here.
If you have a, right, exactly. So virial is an equality. If you have a cloud that's in virial equilibrium, then it's in virial equilibrium. As long as it's isolated.
Shouldn't you be on the intersection of all conditions to have the thing?
Does it have to be in virial equilibrium? Librium in order to collapse into a star? Otherwise, like, wouldn't this only this one line ever produce stars?
Yeah.
Right.
So
I think that's true.
I tweeted it as like a shell of gas, and then I got one condition, the other condition. So I had an intersection point where actually you can have that. So.
Well, I'm not sure the shell how different that would be, because the tidal. I mean, you cannot form a star from a shell around the black hole because it would fall into a black hole. So, yeah. So I'm not quite sure what's the physical interpretation of this.
Well, probably what we need to see here is actually the condition of being tightly bound intersects at some point the condition of being.
But you have two other conditions, right? There's a minimum and maximum mass of a star, right? So do you want to draw those as well? You can use different colors. You have lots of colors.
I know
here.
Yeah.
But you still need an intersection point between them, right?
Right, so, but I think it becomes, first let's draw the lines.
They just have to be somewhere, but I don't know exactly where they are.
Just draw two vertical lines.
Let's see, here.
Okay.
And because one has to be less than the mass of the sun, so it's going to have a negative.
Yeah,
so maybe here.
Okay. And so which one of these you have to be, one is equality and one is an inequality. So
yeah,
right?
This
so,
is
so
equality.
You have to be below
here?
Or, yeah, you have to be below or not. So,
I think you have to be.
So the way you drew your intersection.
But like, yeah, it depends on those lines.
So should I draw, let me draw it in terms of M and R. So it'll be clearer, because I wrote this in
okay.
terms of M and R.
Do it quickly. We want to do another assignment as well.
So I guess my mistake was understanding that the ramp is actually around, it should have been like just close to the sphere.
Nine million gas cloud of mass around the right. I guess I can see how that can be confusing. But you cannot form a star, as I said.
Yeah, but if you think of it as clouds close together, it's not actually a shell, but
that's
it's like kind
tree.
Of clouds.
You're thinking lots of clouds.
Yeah. Then again, yeah, that's
right. Wow. This, you were asking yesterday, where is the astrophysics? This is the astrophysics part. Okay, good. So tidal bound is, which one is a steeper now?
The tidally bound should be greater than this.
Okay, good. Right. Should be greater, perfect.
Yeah.
And then the other condition, they have two horizontal line now here. And then there's another one. Okay, perfect. And you have to be above the tidal bound thing. Okay.
Yep.
So now the question it asks, so can you draw where in this diagram you can be actually to form a star now?
You have to be here.
Okay, and that's one condition, and the other condition?
One.
On top of here.
Okay, so where in this diagram satisfy both those conditions?
Yeah, just the line.
Just the line.
This one?
Yeah.
No.
No,
you have to be on the line.
You have to
line.
Be on the material.
On the line.
On the equation.
You,
and you can go negative.
You can keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Perfect. Good. So there's a, what is it called? It's called partial line or? I don't know what it's called. What is the geometric name for this?
It's a ray.
No, it's not the ray because it ends on both sides.
So the end's a line segment.
It's a line segment, right. It's a line segment. Good. So that's where you have to be. So now the question is, so this thing depends on temperature. The virial guy depends on temperature, right?
That's the last thing.
Okay. So what is the minimum temperature at which gas clouds could form stars? So imagine, look at this and see if I decrease the temperature, what happens? So what happens to that virial equilibrium? Well, the tidal one doesn't depend on temperature, but the virial equilibrium one, does it depend on temperature?
Here.
Good. So what happens if I decrease the temperature to this line?
You're changing the intersection.
Right, so which way does it go if I decrease the temperature?
It's going down.
Oh, good. It goes down. So does that line segment where you can form a star, does that get shorter or longer when you decrease the temperature?
Becomes shorter.
Okay, good. So when does it stop?
Maybe something like this or something like that.
Okay, perfect. So what is the minimum? Can you now find the minimum temperature? Or did you find the minimum temperature?
Oh, is this where we have to find that?
That's where you have to find the temperature.
Well, I just see that the thermal temperature should be equal to the gravitational, that the thermal pressure should be equal to the gravitational pressure. I didn't
well,
see
that.
Well,
that's the real equilibrium, right? That's everywhere in that time. But then the minimum temperature would be where that basically
would be.
Entire
downline intersects with the minimum temperature.
Here?
That's right.
No.
No.
So left, where your red line, yeah.
No.
Okay, did somebody do it?
No, it's going to be where the, so if you bring the virial theorem down.
If you start bringing it down?
Oh.
Eventually
yeah.
You'll intersect.
Okay.
The last minimum
oh.
mass is there.
Oh, okay.
It's
mm-hmm.
right
yep.
there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did somebody work it out? Did Brick, did you work it out?
I forgot to do this part.
Yeah.
You forgot to
But
okay.
You can probably just like, you know, replace the Virial equation with the temperature, or with it in terms of temperature, and then just plug in those values wherever they are.
Yeah. Oh, I have it in terms of mass, just plug in the minimum mass.
So yeah, your M would be minimum mass, K.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
I didn't plug it in.
You didn't
I just
plug
it.
Nobody
plug
it in.
No, I
did
something.
Oh, you got something. Right.
Well,
okay.
You probably do it right now.
Well, I was hoping to do another assignment by now. But how about this? Why don't you... Well, let's see. No, plug it in right now.
So I have the T should be...
Over K what?
K R. So if the minimum mass is the mass of the sun.
0.1 mass.
0.1.
Right.
Oh yeah, 0.1. So G times 0.1 times M
you
sun.
Can write somewhere else. It seems that you're running out of a space there. So okay, so we have that relationship and then we have the tidally bound relationship, right?
Yeah.
So those are the two things.
So you combine both of them and you consider them for mass m
equals 0.1
solar
exactly.
mass.
Exactly. So that's what you need.
Okay. I only have this relation. But then this is an inequality, right? Like, can you...
But then we already argued, right? Then the inequality limits you to that line segment, and that line segment disappears at that minimum temperature.
Yep.
Okay.
So it becomes inequality?
Well, it is an inequality. It becomes an inequality for temperature. So the temperature is less, should be bigger than some minimum temperature
yep.
for this too.
Yeah.
For there to be a region. Okay. So nobody has worked it out. Anyway, so work it out, and maybe you could write it in your assignment if you haven't submitted it, or you can update it and.
Also, we can fix our assignments.
Sure, fix it. Fix just this part of it. Since nobody has done it, then there is no point in grading it. So why don't you just hack with the... So thanks, Yamaka. So this is... So next assignment. This is... That would be assignment. So we got...
You have values, right?
Yeah, I have values.
Assignment 6. That's accretion in astrophysics. That also has 3 parts. So who wants to do it? Rich, you haven't done anything.
I can do the first part.
Okay, we're gonna start there. Find our way.
Yeah, so the first problem of A, where we have to derive the Eddington luminosity by comparing the radiation force to the gravitational force on a hydrogen plasma, and then compare it to solar luminosities. So essentially you need to equate the gradient of the potential to the flux due to radiation. And so, well, radiation, and there's a couple of factors here. There's, how does this work? Right, so this is sigma t over MPC. This makes everything work out correctly. So then what you can do is to calculate the luminosity. You have to integrate the flux over some surface. So then you can make this equal to MPC over sigma t integral the gradient of your potential dot ds. But then you can use Gauss's law to make this equal to MPC over sigma t times cosine of phi times the volume integral. And
that's
now,
not yet Gauss's law.
Or Stokes, one of those things, right? It's
oh, no, this is Gauss's law. Sorry,
yeah.
You're right. This
yeah.
is Gauss's law.
Okay. This is L. And then we know what this is. This is just the Poisson equation. So L is now equal to 4 pi g c m p over sigma t integral rho dv. And so this is just equal to the total mass of the object. So then you have the Eddington luminosity is equal to 4 pi g m n p c over sigma t. And then comparing this to solar luminosities, L ed over L sun is equal to about 3.2 times 10 to the 4 solar mass per for solar masses. Wait, is there some other factor here? Is there some power?
No, you actually, that result is, okay, well, that's correct.
Yeah, no, that's
it's
right.
In terms of the luminosity of the sun.
Yeah.
Everybody got it?
Yeah.
Perfect. It's agreed with Wikipedia.
No, actually, there, Ryden did it on her book,
Who?
Batman Pan.
Okay, so the number is, where is it? 10 to the 3.2 times in the bar. Okay, I give it the key. Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Right.
Thanks, Britt. Did you look up Wikipedia? You did?
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next one is, not in Wikipedia. I hope. No, I guess
it's not in Wikipedia.
Can you do it?
I don't think so. I mean, I can give it a shot, but I don't think I did it correctly.
Okay.
So we can start.
Actually, before you start, we had a disagreement for what you meant by vertical height here.
So let's see.
So I guess the question is,
repeat this calculation for the surface of an accretion disk, not comparing the radiation force due to the radiation. There's a disk.
Right.
There's a radiation force coming from this radiation of the disk.
Right.
So imagine being on the surface of the disk, and I guess.
So what's your surface? Is your surface here
that's
or here?
That's what I'm usually, yeah, right. My discs
no,
don't end
the
usually, they just go in.
Oh, they just go in? Okay. So we don't have any.
But you're right, no, that there is another surface if you draw it that way. But I mean, when you talk about the disc, I mean, there's much more surface well, on the top and bottom, right? Good.
Okay, so I guess.
So there's vertical gravity. So yeah. So there's radiation that's coming out of the disk.
Yeah. So there's radiation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then there is gravity from the central objects.
I thought you meant gravity from the disk itself.
Okay.
Like the, you know, if you think of this as like a plane and you're above it, there should
right.
be.
He said
you can ignore the self-gravity of this. Okay, so that, then there is no gravity from the disk, right? I said
so,
you can ignore
wait,
the self-gravity of the disk.
So is
yeah,
is
so,
the
but does the disk...
Because, like, in a point of the surface,
okay.
like, if you think you have central object here, and one
yeah.
of the surface of it is here, in this point you will have force
mm-hmm.
that is radial in this direction,
mm-hmm.
and this force will have a component on the surface in the disk, and vertically like that.
Yeah.
So that's what
that's
force vertically is.
Right, so that's... okay. Right. So when I sort of did the same thing, but when I did this calculation, I talked about the mass of like, you know, this column
uh-huh.
in the disk.
Okay.
You know.
I see.
There's no self gravity going on here,
mm-hmm.
but there's still a mass here that is acting on some guy up here.
I see. So you thought that the self gravity I mean that okay. So by self gravity I mean the gravity of the disk, but I guess you
okay, so the gravity of the disk is insignificant?
That's that.
Okay.
So Natasha, you seem that you've done
so,
it.
Well,
you want,
yeah.
if you want to do it on the spot, you're more than welcome.
I mean, this is like a like some sort of weird Griffiths problem, right?
It's not that weird.
There's a bunch of different
R's.
It's
a straightforward Griffiths problem.
So you have G. I guess that's theta?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And black hole.
Right.
And then...
Mm-hmm.
Over r squared equals
right.
The radiation force and then I found the radiation force is going to be sigma sb the air some sort of area.
No, you cannot assume it's a black body because here you have thickness and geometrically thin, optically thick doesn't work in this case. It's only for the third case.
Okay,
that
so I guess you have to relate it to like.
You didn't do the same as that.
I don't think it makes a difference for the calculation, whether there's black body or not. Yeah.
No, to say it radiates like a black body, you need to use that it's like geometrically thin and optically thick, so it's going to be like 2D. So
I think for all of everything in this problem, you can assume it's geometrically thin and optically thin.
Then you cannot talk about height. Like a thickness of a disk.
No, a geometrically thin disk still has a thickness.
Yeah.
Right? It's just that it's a
small
thickness.
Yeah. But I don't think it's insignificant. Like, well, I don't know. Like in this question, I think it matters.
The thickness matters.
Yes.
Of course it matters. Right. Of course it matters. But I'm saying, but okay. Anyway, so why don't you write down your solution and then we can discuss?
Well, I mean, we've gone far away from my solution at this point. So I guess...
Do you want to not try to do it on this path? I mean, you are almost there, right?
Yeah.
So you have the gravitational
right.
force, and you want to balance it against the radiative force, the same thing
the
you did here, basically.
Force.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but there I use... right, so this is going to be sigma t over... You see flux.
Okay, good.
And so then, you know, L is the integral
okay.
GBH sine theta over R squared. And this is going to be
the area.
The area, right. is the disk area, or maybe twice the disk area.
Twice the disk area?
Because it's top and bottom, right?
Yeah. It radiates from both ways.
Okay.
Right.
Good. So what do you get?
So, well, shouldn't this be a surface element?
Yes.
So, called a DA.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I think there's a weirdness of units here.
Is there?
So can't we do...
So you can
express
some of those as Eddington, like some of all the constants, there's the same combination as Eddington.
Yeah,
back.
Okay.
And then there's time geometric factor.
Wait, the L Eddington's a little bit weird. Okay. So G M C M P. Right, so this is like L.
It's
over 4. Am I missing any other factors? I don't think so. And then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Right. And then, we can bring this 2 out, so there's just L Eddington over 2. And then this line element is going to be...
Area element.
Area element, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We need to integrate just R squared... dr d theta?
No, it's like the surface is of a disk is pi r squared. So if you want
to go
before an integration,
it wouldn't be.
You're writing the volume element, though, not the area. Well, I'm not so sure what you're writing there. So
this is an area element, right?
But it has a dimension of length cubed, so it's not what? It's
if
r squared dr.
If you wanted that area element, it would be r.
Okay, good. That's better.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And I think then there's a pi in the denominator there you're missing because in the definition of Eddington, right? Okay, good.
Okay, and so then the bounds of the integration, theta would go from 0 to pi over 2?
Pi, I think.
0 to pi.
I don't know.
Pi.
You're going, zero to
but
2
you
pi.
You shouldn't lose the 2 by the end.
Well,
no,
this theta goes around the disk. This because this is you're talking about the surface of the disk, right?
So, but the that theta. That
oh, I thought we were above the disk, not on the disk.
Okay, so how is luminosity related to flux?
Okay, it's flux per area, or no, flux times area.
Okay, and what area is that?
Oh, it's the area of the disk, right? Okay.
So, but the sine theta we're using there is the force down, like in the vertical direction, right?
Yeah.
So,
right.
So we have to use a different theta because, like, that integral.
All right. Those
that's not the same.
That theta is not the different theta. They can call it phi or something.
If anything,
perfect.
Going sine theta as like a function of h and r be better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's
the theta.
This is still theta?
Yes.
Yeah, that's theta. But
so
maybe a better way to do this is rather than going sine theta is like make it a function of h and r.
Yes.
Sine
theta
speaks with h on the.
Okay.
Yeah,
how is sine theta related to h and r?
It's h over r.
Yeah.
Right?
It is just h over r?
Yeah.
Opposite over.
Good, so. Please finish it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, now almost there.
Yeah.
Just plug in, cancel the 2 pi's.
I'll add h over r.
There's just a 2. No, not r squared. It's L Eddington times h over 2 r.
Is that 2
exactly.
r or?
It's a 2 r, yeah, because you consider it both ways.
Why is there a 2r? So of course that integral is a little bit
yeah.
That has a, yeah, that integral has a problem.
That integral, you cannot do it exactly. It depends on, I mean, the profile.
But actually, you can calculate your F radiation alone.
Okay, so that's it. Right. That basically, that the factors of order unity, and there are, there will be factors of order unity depending on, the profile and things like that. Okay, so perfect. So this lesson is that h over r, the thickness, is Eddington ratio. So if you know the luminosity, if you measure the luminosity of a disk and you know the mass of the central object, then you can get at least an upper, a lower limit for how thick the disk is. Right?
What's the bounds of that integral for r at least?
Zero to infinity.
Well, that goes from zero to infinity, so it's.
But so we have an inverse r squared when you replace sine with h over r.
Yeah. So then, when you integrate it, it's...
it diverges.
No.
You're assuming that something is fixed, right? We're assuming that h and the length of the disk.
So you cannot
is
do
fixed.
This exactly. Yeah.
And,
yeah. You cannot do this exactly.
You're
right.
Assuming that in the geometric of the disk.
Okay. But like,
so when I was looking this up online, everything, well, most stuff I looked at said that accretion disks emit at the Eddington luminosity.
Yes.
Which, but this says that it, they don't. They emit related to their height radius.
No, the thinnest,
no. Oh, is the thin disk the important part there?
Well, that is an important part.
Or I guess
yes.
It said they emitted
yeah,
at Eddington if it was like spherical accretion,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Okay.
No, you can have very sub-Eddington disks.
Oh.
Right? So you could have very sub-Eddington. So this is only a lower limit on thickness. So you could have a very thick, could have very sub-Eddington disks which are very thick. Like the one at the central axis,
mm-hmm.
It's very sub-Eddington, very thick. But if they have, if they get close to Eddington, then they should be thick. They're much less than Eddington. They don't have to be thick. They can be thick. They could be thick. But if they get close to Eddington, this tells you that there's too much radiation pressure, so it would puff up the disk. So that's the lesson of this. A luminous disk has to be thick because
yeah.
The radiation pressure puffs it up. Okay, thank you. So that was a collaborative effort, but we made it. And the last part, so we're making a lot of progress. The last part, who's the brave soul who's going to tell us the effective surface temperature?
I haven't done anything. Okay.
Well, Natasha hasn't talked today, so.
Well, I think that Susan has a way better argument than
is that right?
Program.
Okay, maybe we could have hear both of them in the next 7 minutes. Let's just be quick then.
So what I did was just assume that it is the black body radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So the luminosity would be the area of the disk. And then the luminosity is related to the energy that is going away, and this somehow is related with the change in the potential energy of the things that are accreting. So we can write this as G M over R M dot.
Mm-hmm.
So equating these two things.
Hello. Microphone.
So equating these two things. We have the T 24 is G and M dot R cubed. 2 pi.
Good. So that's the temperature. And it says M dot divided by R cubed.
Cubed.
Okay. I didn't ask you for a number, right?
No.
You said in terms of n dot and...
Okay. So, Sasan, what is your argument? Thanks, Natasha.
Okay. It's a bit longer than hers, but...
Okay. It's better. It's compared to it.
But I think it's more understandable through her argument.
So, where should I write?
You can, I don't know if there's any free, I don't think there's any free thing, you can erase anything.
Okay. Yeah, so we take a luminosity patch, on the accretion disk.
Mm-hmm.
Its luminosity is given by twice its surface times sigma sb 2^4.
Mm-hmm.
So, so its mass is given by dm equals to sigma ds, where the sigma is the surface mass density.
Right.
So that makes our dl equals to 2dm over sigma, big sigma, times sb, sigma sb t^4. And then, so we say that the energy that is radiated away comes from the gravitational potential energy of
mm-hmm.
the patch, which is given by dU equals to minus gm dm divided by r, where this m is the central mass. So, I'm not sure I really, really get this, but it's actually a viscosity that causes the patch to slowly
mm-hmm.
spiral inwards, like
right,
towards
right.
that. So it loses its potential energy at a rate of dl, it's called dl potential,
mm-hmm.
of gm dm over r squared, dr over dt,
mm-hmm.
which is gm dm over r squared v, where v is the radial velocity of the patch towards the thing. So if we assume that the gravitational potential energy goes to heating the disk, that means that dl is dl this, then it gives us T as equals to JM sigma V squared, without square, over 2 sigma SB R squared all to the 1/4. Then the rate of the accretion rate is M dot given by 2 pi R sigma V, which means that if we plug in this over this, we can replace sigma and v. So we get T equals to, this is zero, I think I write it, nearest way, m to the 1/4, m dot 1/4, r to minus 3/4. That's what it is.
Okay.
So there's a difference of probably 2 or something. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering that there should be a 2 in the denominator there.
Here?
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's the potential energy, but there's kinetic energy.
Not sure.
Total energy is that divided by 2. Kinetic energy is positive.
So there's a 2 here, you mean?
Yeah.
Probably, I'm not sure. That
would make it 8.
I'll make it even worse. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, good. Thank you. So I guess they're both. So this gives you a temperature profile. I guess that gives you some average temperature, but they're essentially the same. So this is, but that the arc the minus 3 quarter, that would be the prediction of this model, basically, for the temperature profile of this. And it's something that people measure actually. This is actually what people use to measure the spin of black holes. I was talk about this yesterday or 2 days ago. Maybe 2 days ago. 2 days ago there was a talk about this at this conference that this you can actually basically predict the spectrum of a radiation from an accretion disk from this basic this temperature. Because this is not one temperature, the temperature changes with radius. You have to add a lot of black bodies. But then what happens is that there's an inner radius that depends on the spin of the black hole. Inside of that, there is no circular orbit anymore. Everything basically falls straight. And basically by measuring the spectrum, X-ray spectrum of accretion disks around the stellar black holes, you can measure their spin, basically. You see at what R you have to truncate this disk. Right. So this was for Keplerian disk, that was just G over R. But in general relativity, these would be truncated at some point because there is no circular orbit inside some radius. So it's very, very useful, calculation. Although this is a toy model, this is kind of actual calculation is more complicated, but this is the same spirit in which it has to be done. Perfect. Thanks, everybody. And we are good for today. And we have to, I guess, we meet next Tuesday?
Yeah, we'll meet next Tuesday. Right.
So there was a talk, if you want to watch this, there was a talk by Jeff McClintock. Which is basically using this method to measure the spin of black hole. So this was for this conference this week.
They measure very slow spinning
They measure different spins. Some of them are fast, some of them are slow.
Cool.
Okay. See you guys.
Yeah.